Welcome to Exagility. I'm your host, John Coleman. Roland Flem and Alexei Krivitsky, welcome to the Exagility podcast. How are you doing today?
Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I'm delighted to have you here. Really excited to talk about org topologies. It's really what a lot of executives are looking for and looking forward to digging into that later on. But first of all, I just want to introduce you both. So Roland, you're Scrum.org, professional Scrum trainer, and you're one of the founders of org topologies, I understand. And Alexei Krivitsky, you are a CST with Scrum Alliance and also a CEC at Scrum Alliance. Not many of those, have both of them. And you're also a co-founder at org topologies. I'm curious what brought you to org topologies and what brought you together as a pair. How did you end up in this place where you're now talking about org topologies to people on podcasts and stuff? How did you end up in this journey?
I think we have different stories, but we're going to share them anyway. Yeah, so I've been in the field of agile coaching for about 15 years, a lot of time spent coaching individual teams. Well, and then basically I've realized that's not giving all the benefits, all the promises of Scrum, unless they are not for the individual teams, but for a product organization, right? So I've realized that every time I talk to my clients these days, 90% of the time, they talk about teams. So I figured I've spent so many years doing agile team coaching at the team level. I've done some disservice to the industry because I guess the focus has shifted so much into the teams that we forgot what those teams should be working on. And then I've noticed about 5-7 years ago, they became like a new trend, a new school of thought emerged, you know, of those people who really hate agile coaches and they really would like to promote a product thinking and all that product things. What I was trying to do with my thoughts of org topologies when I approached Roland with them was to stop this dualistic thinking. Is it teams or is it products? And find a holistical thing, because those things, they are parts of something bigger. And we believe products and teams, you need to think of both, right?
Indeed, yeah. So Klaus Leopold, he says, is this one-liner, agility is not a team sport, it's an organizational sport. A lady called Pia Maria Tharian, she was in the first episode of Exagility, she held a flower pot, and it wasn't really a flower pot, but she was pretending there was a flower pot there, and there was a flower in the pot, was the idea, and she said, grow flower, grow! And she was making a joke that we're expecting teams to go faster, but we're not exactly giving them the environments they need. So that's kind of the journey you came on, Alexei. Thank you so much. And Roland, what about yourself? How did you get to this place?
Well, there's two sides of this story. One side of the story is that I really, 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 really wanted to work with Alexei. And because I've had a couple of collaborations in the past, and we knew each other for a long time already, and, you know, it was just meant to be that at this point in time, when we had beers, we were both ready to start working on something together. We tried a couple of things, and then this actually kind of did it for us. Then the reason why org topologies for me is actually as an organizational consultant, because next to training, I like to help organizations to get into a better state of being more flexible and all that. But the difficulty is that you always get caught up, regardless of the level that you're entering into an organization, whether it's low with the team or high with the board, it's always about frameworks, right? And they want to know what their not so close competitors do, and they want to see, and they want to understand, and they want to learn from them. And then big consultancy companies come in and they show beautiful slide packs, and then everybody goes for flavor X with some additions or whatever. And ultimately everybody is disappointed. You know, it's like ticking off an implementation roadmap, and then we're done. We're never done. What I was struggling with is to find the mode, vocabulary, of being able to talk to people in organizations to look beyond the framework and to really understand what we're doing here. And, you know, and actually that's the same as what Alexei was saying from a different angle.
Thank you, Roland. So that kind of leads me on to why org topologies. Why would an organization want something like org topologies? I guess you're kind of leading into it a little bit in that you found that people were focusing too much on frameworks. But there must have been some other reasons as well that led you to putting this together, because you really simplified and almost codified what might be some considerations when you want to grow agility in an organization. So why is it that org topologies is even needed?
Yeah, so I have like two reasons always in my mind for why org topologies and why we spend so much time with Roland working on that. The first reason is that, as I said above, I think organizations, they tend to focus too much on the teams, right? I had a client recently and they are into team topologies and we had a discussion with them. So what you guys are going to build? And they say, yeah, we're going to build this many stream aligned teams and whatnot. So they were thinking of teams, but when I asked them a question, so what those teams will be working on, what's the value, how many backlogs, they had completely no idea what I was talking about. So they were thinking of teams, not really thinking why they need those teams and around what they're going to build those teams. So one reason for org topologies, I guess that's why we have these two axes on the map. One is how good your teams are, and another one around which value those teams are working on and which value they're learning to work on. So the teams and the value, basically. And one main reason for why org topologies is that I just wanted to show my clients that it's not enough to think of teams. You also need to think of the value. And I guess the value needs to go first. First, you need to understand what, right? What you want to deliver. Are there some features or maybe customer journeys, or maybe you're thinking about a product line or the whole product or whatever. And after that, you can have a discussion which teams and how many teams we need. So this was like the main reason for me. And the secondary reason, and I guess Roland, that's where we cross our minds with Roland, is that we have observed that large organizations, as Roland has just said, tend to find a framework and fell in love with that framework. And they believe the goal of the agile transformation is to go and implement that backlog, that framework. And we would like to show them that implementation of the framework is not the goal. That's why we've built these archetypes on the map, right? That can show you that you can progress along the way, and maybe you need to apply different frameworks at different times, you know, or even don't think about frameworks, but rather think about your perfection vision. What is the kind of organizations you would like to build? Something that people think a lot about, and we just would like people to think more about these two questions.
And I'd like to add to that, that from my experience as a trainer, I get a lot of questions from people that are in a situation where they think they're not being very productive or they're not really enjoying their work anymore since they're into some transformation or they finalized that transformation or whatever. I noticed that I can really help those people and bring them a good message like, hey, it's okay. You're probably here on the map and it's just an evolution to something better. And I'm going to help you to progress on that map and make conscious decisions on what you can do, go left or right, or up or down.
That sounds really nice. So like you're providing a direction, you're helping the organization to understand what their direction might be, where they might be now, yeah. What might help them now.
I guess you can sum it up as helping organizations and the leaders to get unstuck and get the real deep change moving and see the change not as a project with a fixed end date, with a fixed checklist, but rather a journey. And to make that journey inspiring, there should be some sweet picture, you know, hanging and pulling you towards.
The island with the palm trees.
Right. And yeah, we're still yet to learn if that tool really works this way for the amount of leaders who would like to give a benefit, but with our clients and with a narrow group of people where we use this model and we were taught on org topologies, they got a lot of value. Basically, it's a tool to help you have a deeper conversations, you can say, in your organization around where we are now in terms of change or transformation, where we are now. And secondly, where are we going with that? And I think these two questions are very important to keep discussing because, again, it's easy to get stuck and it's easy to substitute ends with means.
And the conversations just make more sense instead of going to training and trying to learn everything beforehand on what Safe offers or Spotify model or whatever model that you want to do, what it needs to be able to draw the organizational grid, because that's what they always want, right? They want to make the org chart. Mm. They want to talk about target operating model and all that. Well, let's first wait a bit with that. Let's first, before we go into the solution, let's focus a little bit longer on the problem. What problem are we trying to fix? What are the current limitations in your organization that stopped you for so long already to move in a certain direction? And maybe we can help you with what we've seen in other organizations, where you are and what the effects of your next move could be.
So I think what I heard you say is that it's not a target operating model. It's a framework, if you like, or a visualization that allows you to assess where you might want to go. It's not necessarily a destination. That's a direction you might want to go on. This is maybe where you are now. These are some potential next steps.
There's a very important assumption underneath the org topologies map, as we would.
Yeah, map. Okay.
Because it's a map, but the assumption is that the organizations are in search of being able to work as a whole, or maybe a large part of the organization, to immediately work on some initiative as it pops up. There's this big threat that needs to be addressed, or this big opportunity that we can grasp. And if we can then, without any additional cost, just do it and deliver it in 2 weeks from now, or less than a month, as Chrome says, then that is a very high degree of adaptivity. Then you're really, really probably on that tropical island. But that's an assumption that we think that people want to be there.
Got it. Yeah. Thank you. So you mentioned that there were two axes. And I think what I heard was one of the axes is how good your teams are. And the other one was more to do with the value focus, like user versus product versus customer. But if you could focus, first of all, on the teams, when you were thinking about how good your teams were, what did you kind of land in the end? What was the progression that you noticed in terms of from a less adaptive team to a more adaptive team? I'm guessing that's the scale, right?
Yeah, so we play a lot with the name of the axis, right? And currently this axis is called fluency in delivering a single customer value item.
Yeah.
It might be a bit too long, but that's what we actually mean by this axis. So the more you progress along the axis, the better individual teams are in delivering some individual items from a backlog, no matter at which level those backlogs are formed. This axis can also be referred to transactional costs. So how efficient, I guess, the discovery delivery processes are for a given feature, they can be measured with the lead time for change, I guess, for individual items on the backlog. So all those things together we see as progressing along this horizontal axis on our map.
Okay, so kind of a disagreement about terminology, isn't there?
Yeah.
But I like to talk about cake a lot because everyone understands cake. We can eat a sponge cake, for example. You might have layer of cake teams for software, front end, middleware, back end, something like that. And then slice of cake and I cut down through the cake. Cake is the problem, the customer problem that needs to be solved, if you like. There's other expressions as well, which I think are regrettable. Some people understand there's some piece of technology, something difficult to work on or a layer. And could the team topologies people have their own view of that as well, don't they? They've got complicated subsystem, they've got enabling team and all this kind of thing. So what did you kind of settle on in your terminology when you were looking at this?
So what we have on the left, the lowest state on the axis is individual single skill work. Mm. That's actually pre-team organization. That's an organization who hasn't yet discovered the value of teams, and the work is sliced up into tasks, and the tasks are given to individuals who are able to do those tasks, you know?
Yeah.
And from there, the next level would be what we call group work in functional silos, which you just refer to as component teams. So component teams would be the second step progressing along this axis.
That would be one layer of the cake from John.
That's where an organization has already recognized the value of teamwork, because teams, you know, they can absorb a certain level of complexity. If you have a team, you don't need to slice up and break down all the work for it. You can delegate some work to a team. Now you have the teams, but they're not teams yet. We call them functional groups because those groups are basically built around a specific function, right? It can be a backend team, right? It can be a component team of some other sort. It can be a testing team, any team, any group of people that can together do a narrow set of skill. And of course, you've noticed a pattern. The more you progress along this axis, the more flow you have on delivering something that is valuable to your customer. And of course, we know that if you have functional groups or component teams, right, there will be lots of waiting and blaming and dependency and external coordination will be required for the work to be passed from a group to a group, eventually leading and reaching the customer hands. So the fluency in delivering customer feature is low here. And that's why it's not the last step. The third step would be where an organization realizes, okay, we need to build cross-functional teams, right? That's basically a Scrum guide. When you read the first page of a Scrum guide, I guess that's what it says there. So now you have what you call, in quotes, agile teams, right? You have created teams who are able to work across in a cross-functional way on what customers want. And it's great, but apparently those teams can still be missing some skills. They can do, I don't know, for example, delivery. They can build a feature in backend and frontend, and it can test the feature. But say discovery is still in the hands of a functional group of product managers.
Or they can put it in production.
The requirements, or down the line, the team is not able to put this into production, so they need help of enabling team, or what's the
platform
coolest
team.
Name for it, which an ops team which can do it for them. So now you have created a core unit of your work, which is a cross-functional team, but it's not yet completely autonomous. It still has dependency on the old organization, if you will. And the last step on this progression would be to create teams which are autonomous, and we call them multidisciplinary work with flow, constantly improving due to skill acquisition. So again, lots of words, but what we're trying to communicate here is that it's a multidisciplinary work. So this team has different skills and it can work across different components. So it's a cross-component and cross-functional work with flow, because the flow of customer value will be higher in this team. But it's not just that. It is constantly improving due to skill acquisition. So this team is, you can say, permanent, and it is given work that is important, and it's not always the case that the work that is given to a team has one-to-one mapping to the skills the team has. So the team from time to time will have to learn something new. So the flow of customer value will be increasing because the team will be learning new skill. This becomes like a learning unit. Which is, again, if you read a Scrum guide, actually, it is coded there. You would like to have a multidisciplinary team which can learn to solve a customer problem, right? In Marty Kagan's terminology, that would be an empowered product team because it has all the necessary skills to take a problem and solve it. And sometimes you need to learn some skills, go discover some information which you need to be able to do that.
So that it's still focused on a single customer value item. There's this single problem that they're able to deliver done.
Yeah, so this is one axis, which is about how good the teams are.
Yeah.
Right. And I guess just to repeat, we're going from individual workers just doing tasks up to the best possible team ever, which has all the necessary skills and can also learn.
Let's say that the specialization of this team is still pretty narrow. It's going very deep because they can deliver from idea to done. But they're the search team, right? They only do search stuff. And they might learn to do as much as they need to learn to deliver done. And they pick up new stuff. But it's just one dimension of the map.
Right. We really tried hard to decouple these dimensions from each other. they're still a little bit related, because the better the team is, as I've just described, the better it can work on the customer value. But they're still just one dimension on the map.
Warren, could you explain to us the other dimension then, the vertical dimension, which is more about value, yeah, isn't it?
Vertically, on the lowest level, we see that the teams tend to focus a lot on tasks. You're just getting the task on an individual level. They need to fix it and just do it. Maybe you might have an idea why you're doing it, but somebody has decomposed a problem and made it into tasks and coordinates those tasks over people. So the lowest level is a person picks up a task. And then as you grow more into having teams that are stable, you will be able to work more from a value perspective, not just a task, but one level higher would be features, customer features. So there's this concept of customer centricity that comes into play, where people in the team, even if they would do individual tasks, the next step would be they would start to see that they're really working on a feature for a customer. Wow, let's deliver value. So the concept of value becomes something that they understand. But still, it's a narrow feature. It's not like the whole solution for the customer. That would be another next level to grow. Okay, so we're going from tasks to feature scope, and then even higher to product and service, where in the same time as we were in the lowest level, we talk more about individuals, and then up we go to features. We talk more about creating teams and getting stuff even more, let's say, squeezed together from a value perspective. Features would be clogged together into value areas. So an area of value in the company where a feature could be the search feature or the checkout feature, and the value area would be much more focused on journeys that a customer would go through, you know, going from searching items, putting it into a basket, and then do checkout. The value area becomes bigger. And then ultimately, everybody in the organization, if you want to be very flexible, should understand everything about the whole product domain. So that if you compare that in contrast with just an individual knowing a task, or everybody in the organization understanding all the problems at customer level and understanding the value at that level, at the product level that they want to deliver to the customer. Just imagine how much faster you can go. I'm just saying fast now, could be anything else, but I'm just saying fast, how fast you could go if everybody immediately understands where things sit and understand how to make changes on that level. That makes sense, right? They talk marketing language, customer language, instead of, you know, very low level technical language in tasks. Yeah. But that's really talking about value, talking about consolidating value, clogging it together until heads explode. There might be a cognitive end to how much we can understand, but let's try how far we can get in understanding the whole customer problem.
Absolutely. I think there's a real overemphasis on cognitive load. Cognitive load is important, but there's so much noise about it that we could end up using it as an excuse not to learn anything, not to do any change.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
Just for the record, these axes that Roland has just described, and actually with examples, on a map, again, we picked the longest name we could find, and it would be fluency in learning the whole product. It's not the immediate ability of everybody to work across the entire product, but it's fluency in learning. Like, are the teams doing any effort? Are the teams putting any effort into learning something new?
On the domain.
Yes, on the domain, right? Maybe there is this search feature and it can spend all its time working on the search features, the search team, right? Or maybe it spends, you know, like 10% of its time to learn something else that might be also important at some point of time in the company, right? So this is about expanding your horizon, expanding your view on the customer value. And of course, you will hit some limit eventually, right? That where cognitive load really hits you, but it should not prevent you from trying to learn a bit more than you already know.
I want to add to and summarize a bit. So the horizontal axis was being able to deliver on a customer value item, that is adding capabilities to the team so they can not just do coding, but they do DevOps, they put things in production, right? That kind of capability How much fluency do they have in being able to do technical stuff or whatever? Horizontal. Vertically, it's understanding the customer problem, understanding the customer domain. And also, do they have individual work or is there just one product backlog for the whole company? Or is there a team product backlog? Or is there a product backlog per customer journey, a department or value area or whatever you'd want to call it? That's the vertical axis. And of course, these two are related to each other. And it's like there's a rubber band between them. And we've rediscussed and rehashed and tried different namings and separations. But so far, we see vertically value, horizontally, the ability to deliver done, if I may say so.
Yeah, it's almost like the horizontal is like about the technical capability of the team in terms of delivering customer value.
Exactly.
And then the vertical is about how well do we understand the organizational domain to actually deliver breadth.
It's like where you apply that capability.
Yeah.
Yes. Which,
yeah.
On your definition of value, right?
Yeah.
They go hand in hand, right? They go hand in hand. You need to move up the technical, beef up your technical capabilities to be able to deliver more breadth in the domain.
Because if you, for example, have only component teams, right, they will likely always be working only at the task level because they're not able to build any feature, any customer requirement end to end. So somebody needs to break down those requirements into pieces, which we call tasks, and feed those tasks to the teams, right? So to be able to go up and make a team working on something that is more relevant to customer than just some work in some specific component, you need to invest in creating better teams. So those excesses, they kind of related to each other. And in order to progress on one, you still need to invest in progressing along the other.
So Alexei, maybe this is a good time for people who are just listening and they cannot see the map. Of course, they can look it up. Maybe we should describe the left bottom corner. We mapped these horizontal and vertical axes are creating a grid. Each grid, we gave them a letter number combination so we can refer to them when we're having a dialogue with anyone. We can say, oh, you're in A0. Oh, that's interesting. So that gives you a vocabulary. But maybe it's good if we just, Alexei, explain the Y0, left bottom corner. So that's tasks plus individual skill. What kind of organization is that?
Yes. And interestingly, as you hear us describing those, what we called archetypes, right? You will see that basically we start having interesting language. We can refer to a two type organization and we immediately know what we mean by that. So a side effect of this work on org topologies is that we hear people who use this map to start also sharing this language. So let us introduce you. We've discovered by now 7 organizational archetypes that we can put on this map in a specific box. And the lowest one, as Roland has just mentioned, it is basically, we call it Y0. Y would be the row, 0 would be the column. So Y0, it's called intertwined projects and lonely workers. And I guess the name describes what's happening in these kind of organizations. You focus too much on projects. You don't think of product being long-term continuous work because you still don't know how to manage product development. You break all the work in the company into the projects, and the projects, you basically break them down into tasks and you basically feed those tasks to the individual workers. And what this organization is optimizing for, it is optimizing for a resource utilization of cost centers. So for each archetype, there will be a name, and there will be something this kind of organization is optimizing for. So this one is definitely optimizing for resource utilization because they don't know any better. They don't see the value as the customer see it. So the only way to manage this organization is just to make sure everybody is kept busy. And in order to keep everybody busy, of course, you need to break down the tasks and give them to the right people with the right skills. And then you need to have an army of managers, I guess, you know, to make sure that people have enough tasks in front of them. You can say, well, this is not a very agile organization. Why do we have it on the map in the first place? So this map has nothing to do with agile organizations. We try to think broader with Roland as much as we can, and we try to map any product development archetype on the map. And for some of the companies, for some of you, this will be a start of your journey. And that's why it has a place on the map. And we're not criticizing anything. We don't believe people are stupid, but we believe system makes people behave in a specific way. And this organization, because everybody is so busy trying to do those projects, they got stuck in this individualistic task work, and they don't even have time to go and improve and look beyond what's on the table.
Let's imagine that we are in a company where I'm a developer and I get all these tasks all the time for different projects. And every time a new project manager coming to me to ask new stuff, and I'm wasted. I'm just being used and used and used and used as a resource to be optimized. The 8 hours that I'm spending in the office, they are going to make sure that I'm going to be delivering to all kinds of projects. Now, at a certain point in time, probably there's going to be this squeeze because there's going to be maybe a rise in demand. And how much further can you stretch an organization like that? You know, you just add more resources, you know, and then you keep on continuing in your same setup, splitting up stuff, bringing it to the resources, managing all that, putting it back together. But there will be a point where somebody is going to start asking, maybe we should try something else. It's getting too difficult to put. How long was it since we've delivered, finished some project successfully?
Yeah.
And so there will be a pain. And then it's time for people to move to a new archetype.
I've even seen a situation as well where there was this belief that you just keep on adding people, scale your way out of any problem, outsource your way out of any problem, add more agencies, it's all good. But there was one person that everybody was depending on.
Yep.
One person.
Absolutely.
And that was like a brilliant person. It's not her fault that she was a bottleneck.
No, we don't believe people are evil.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I haven't actually seen any people in the company, any person in the company who was trying to fail a project. Like everybody is trying to do the best, but sometimes it's not enough just to do the best. Sometimes you need to rethink how you work. And going from a box, from an archetype to an archetype on a map, this is an important change, right? So every change on a map, and sometimes we say with Roland that the space in between the boxes on the map is more important than the boxes themselves, because each change of the box represents what we call a paradigm shift.
But Alexei, you're saying it, each change, this is what the lines, the borders between the boxes represent the change you need to go through. Otherwise, you're going to be stuck in your old system.
Yes. So I guess the pain should grow bigger and you need to have some new ideas somehow in the company to realize, oh, there is another way of doing the work, right? And we call this a paradigm shift. And just to jump to archetypes, just to save the time for the audience, if you go one level up and two levels to the right, you are now in A2. A2 is an archetype which we called hopeful yet entangled teams. That's where an organization has already realized that, you know, managing people, individuals, and tasks is not how things need to be managed. So they've realized the paradigm shift of user focus. They started to think now about the user stories. They have somebody who can talk to a user and bring this knowledge at least to a team. There is now a discussion, okay, what does a user want? As a user, I want to print so that I can read at least this level of user centricity. And they've also realized an important paradigm of stable teams, an important paradigm of a multidisciplinary work. This organization, which we call A2 on a map, as already stable teams, and those teams are cross-functional, and those teams work on something that is that has some value for the users.
But it's A2, which they cannot all deliver all done.
It's a dependency on some departments who, for example, are not able or don't want, due to some political issues, to give away their skills, you know, to somebody else. I've seen a lot of agile transformations where you are creating those agile teams, but eventually there will be some barrier. Somebody will say no. Like, I'm a team leader of this ops team or of this discovery team. I'm not going to give all my people to those agile teams. So eventually you will find some stop line. I guess it's a dilemma, right, for a leader. So do you go with a not ideal agile transformation you will creating agile teams, but they will be blocked by some departments, or you're not doing this at all.
Yeah.
And because now we have a map where we say, yes, it's a legal move on the map to create those not ideal teams. We say, yes, go with this agile transformation if that's the highest possible level you can get to. But remember, there is still a long way to go.
Yeah, we can more easily give a projection of, let's say that we're moving to A2 with these multidisciplinary teams that have feature focus, but still dependencies. So we can describe much better. We can talk about what this organization will look like, what it will need. It will need coordination. It will need people to make things done because, you know, the teams cannot deliver an integrated increment. And it makes sense because you see the other blocks on the map around it going more up or going more to the right. There's value consolidation. So the example that Alexei was just giving, that some department you're running into a brick wall saying, no, you're not going to get my people for this agile transformation. That's where we would need some consolidation, right? To have the teams work on a bigger concept of product or value, we would need that domain to be integrated in our teams. And if that department doesn't allow us, then that upward growth path is probably not yet an option.
Yeah, I was thinking as well that I can't help thinking about dependencies when you were talking about the different levels, the different archetypes that you have so on. And so one of the patterns that I teach sometimes is Nexus. Another one would be Less is a really nice pattern. In Nexus, they have this case study and you're looking at the dependencies. And I mean, it's a coping strategy for dealing with dependencies, but it's still a mess, an absolute mess. I'd love to see, like, in each archetype, what a dependency board might look like. You know what I mean? Would it be like spaghetti junction, or would it be like kind of asynchronous links between them, or would it be all kind of jumbling all together to get all the work done? Something visual to kind of represent, because I think a lot of the time organizations say, oh, I only have appetite to go to A2, for example, right? I'm just making that up. I don't know. Do they realize the cost at staying at A2? Do they realize the mess that the teams are still having to deal with to get value out the door? What do you think about that?
I think they don't realize that. And that explains the success of well-known frameworks, because we only find out once we've implemented it that actually we didn't spend enough time on really looking at the customer problem and understanding that we would need to reorganize ourselves dramatically, drastically, to set up teams that really can deliver that customer value. And we don't. I see people, especially in classes, because then the boss is not there, right? So they can speak, I'm their trusted friend. And then they tell me, Roland, we've got these big BI events and I'm sitting there with teams and I don't know why I need to talk to those teams. There's no dependency whatsoever with those teams, but the teams I really need to talk to are not in my art, in my agile release train. So why? I don't know why, but you know, those dependencies are really hard. And if you just draw the outline of your target operating model and think like, oh, this is going to be ideal, that's probably not going to work. It needs to come from the organization and with the input of the people in the organization too.
Yeah, just because you've mentioned dependencies, I have to say we've done a bit of work and research with Roland on the topic of dependencies, right? Mm. And we've come to realize there is, you know, there's two types of things people mean when they say dependencies. And one has a negative connotation, one has a positive, actually. So you would like to minimize the one which has a negative one, increase the one which is a positive one. So going on the right, on the map, you will be making teams more autonomous. The teams will be able to deliver stuff with flow. And of course, in this progression, you are reducing the bad blocking dependencies by insourcing skills into teams, and by helping teams to stay longer together to learn skills that they don't have. So each team becomes autonomous, right? And this is important to reduce these dependencies. And I guess you've just mentioned API events, SAFe, right? This is a method, a framework, an A2 organizations. And now I said A2. And if you listen to the previous 20 minutes of this podcast, you know what we mean by just saying A2. This is the power of language. So the SAFe would be a way how an A2 organization can go about managing its dependencies, right? To bring all the teams together to discuss and put all those dependencies on the board. But there is another kind of dependencies. If you're going up the map and the teams are learning to work on a broader perspective of the value from the eyes of a customer, ideally, imagine a situation where there's one backlog for all the teams in a company. So I worked in a last adoption where we had one product backlog owned by a CEO of a company for 6-7 teams. So there's one list of priorities for all 6 teams. And which item is the most important? Of course, the one on the top. So which item all the 6 teams need to be working on now, next sprint, is the top item. So apparently you are creating dependencies. These are good dependencies, right? Because this is just business priorities. This is the work the teams need to learn to share.
They're happening at the same time, right? Because we're all working in the sprint on the same problem. So they're synchronous. Yes. That's a big difference. And the other ones are asynchronous. Mm-hmm. We're waiting for the other team to pick up something on their backlog that we need from them to go on. So these are synchronous dependencies, and I would rather call them opportunities for collaboration.
Yeah.
Yes. These are not really dependencies in a negative way, because when people say dependency, they typically say locked.
Yeah.
And somebody else is out there to blame. A positive dependency, I guess, has an opportunity for collaboration, right? As people in less community used to say, these ones we're trying to maximize, because progressing upward on the map, the number of backlogs will go down, ideally going to just one backlog for the entire organization. And if you have just one, of course, the most important thing is just to work on a few items from the top of that list, which will make people work on the same stuff.
There's something that you said that triggered me. You worked with this company where the CEO had 6 teams and there was one product backlog. And of course, the most important thing was on top of the backlog. I think this is a paradigm shift that is very, very difficult. Yeah. Many companies, they've got so much going on and they cannot, they will not decide to put their money on just one thing that is the most important thing. They just don't do it.
Yes, and it didn't happen overnight. It took us about half a year to arrive to this state with that company, going from component teams having individual team level, component level backlogs to reorganization into teams which are more cross-functional, cross-component, who can learn and willing to learn to work on something broader. It's a journey, and this company is still learning how to go about this work, because it's a never-ending challenge.
Yeah, indeed. I just want to ask you about discovery. So discovery would be essentially where people do research or they'd run some experiments. I have a theory that maybe 60 to 90% of items in our backlog shouldn't be built. Maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but that's kind of my experience, right? A lot of items, let's put it that way. If you actually built them, you'd realize, oh, actually, they make things worse, or actually, we don't need them. Actually, there's a much better idea somewhere else. So you can do discovery, and I call it discover to not deliver, where you do all these experiments, and then you got, say, 40 ideas, and then you realize 15 of them are good, and actually found 5 new ones. How does that idea fit into this map, the whole idea of discovery and learning more about what the customer really wants? Because actually the customer a lot of the time doesn't know what she wants.
If they would have asked me, they would say faster horses.
But because discovery is about learning the value, that definitely speaks about archetypes which have realized some potential on the vertical axis. But if those companies still believe in a duality between discovery and delivery, that some skilled people need to discover and think and then create items on the backlogs for teams to deliver, they have not progressed well enough on the horizontal axis. So they are somewhere at the top of the map, but closer to the vertical axis on the left side, because those teams eventually who will be delivering, they won't be able to discover by the definition of the process I've just described, so that those teams are not cross-functional.
Which makes them less flexible or adaptive as a company, because you're creating this dependency between two teams. You cannot let everybody work on anything. You have the people that are specialized. There's always specialization in a company.
Yeah, you have like a two-phased process. First, you discover and think, and then you execute on it. I guess that's not what you don't mean by like real discovery, which is a part of ongoing delivery recovery cycles.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree that like 60%+ of the work which we have on backlog should not be done, right? But I think it's also legal to have items on the backlog, which are just things you need to discover. And the result of work on these items will be just more items at the end of a sprint.
Exactly.
So I'm really for avoiding any kind of duality. So team product duality, we're trying to fight for with a map. So I'm really a true believer that in order to create a truly adaptive organization, you need to create teams which are able to discover and deliver at the same time. So
Definitely. Learn
without relying on external specialists.
Just imagine if you want to rather discover and not do the work, but to build something for it, then you would need to have minds that are prepared and ready to think out of the box. So you would need some kind of higher level of maturity on the value concept. So you need to go up.
Yeah. So they have people who they call product managers who do a lot of, and they have teams who are more on the delivery side of things. The way I try to glue things together in this organization by saying, yeah, you can discover and formulate a hypothesis, but then you need to run experiments to prove it or disprove it. An experiment is already some kind of work team should be doing. It doesn't have to be implementing a full-fledged solution in the production code. This will be a very expensive experiment. But can you teach teams to do cheaper experiments, you know, paper prototyping or wireframing or interviewing, whatnot? And they say, yes, we can. Well, then this becomes the job of the team to run those experiments. And for each experiment, you need to prepare something.
Exactly.
And this is how I believe you can progress on the axis upwards and rightwards.
We're almost at the end of our interview now, but there's one thing that struck me during this interview is not only can org topologies help with understanding your direction and maybe getting more reality about where you are and where you might really want to go in the next 6 months, but also this might be an unintended consequence, but it might be useful for people who believe they can buy agility in a box. You've been doing lots of research on this. You're doing lots of blogging at the moment about this topic. We're going to put the links in the footer of this episode. And so people can actually see where does higher quality safe go, where does less go, where does empowered product teams, I guess Nexus flight levels will be in there, all these unfixed will be in there eventually. But it's kind of nice that you can actually look at the map and see where a particular option might fit. And that can also help you to see where some of the limitations of that option might be as well.
Yeah.
Yes, we believe everything has its limitation and it's important to recognize them and also see a journey behind those limitations, right?
And what we've also discovered is that when we explain the map and we talk about it, and then we ask people, so where do you think you are? Which box do you sit? And then for instance, well, we think we are B2. And then we're going to discuss the characteristics of a B2 organization and what it needs, how consolidated is your backlog. And then we find out while we're talking, there's this awareness. Oh, wait a minute. We're not as good as we thought we were.
Yeah.
That's valuable because then at least it's transparent, like for everybody, very transparent. Where are we? What are our challenges that we need to face?
I actually think there's another approach that came out recently called Agile Kata that'd be very compatible with your approach because it's kind of based in Toyota Kata. You kind of like, what's your direction? Where are you going? Your vision or whatever? What's your challenge in terms of maybe where you want to go? Which grid do you want to go to on the map? Mm-hmm. And then you could say, well, okay, what's our current condition? And as you said, they're rolling. They thought they were in grid whatever, but they were actually a bit below it. They were a lower archetype or whatever. Oh, we're actually here. And there's actually a lot in the scientific method. You really do need to understand where you are, don't you? Because a lot of the time we think we want to be there. You think you're halfway, but you're not actually your way back here. And so what little thing do we need to do next to move a little bit further? What do you think is going to happen? And then what actually happened? What did you learn? I could see a rinse and repeat thing. I could see a lot of overlap between Agile CAD and what you're doing as well. Fabulous work, gentlemen. Thank you so much for coming on the X Agility podcast.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us again.